Hello and hi, welcome to another Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest now is writer-director Liam O'Donnell, who was involved in Beyond Skyline and the new Skylines, coming to you on demand and digital on December 18th. Liam, welcome, and I am so happy you're bringing indie sci-fi gifts.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
How did you get involved in the Skylines series, and just what fueled your passion for space adventure?
I got involved when I kind of came up with the idea for the first one with the directors, Greg and Colin Strauss. We'd been developing different things. I had helped them on their first movie as a consultant. Their first movie was Aliens vs. Predator 2. So I was obviously pretty steeped in aliens and science fiction, some of my favorite movies. So that was a dream to get to work on as my first experience on set. And so then for the second one, it was really like cinema was kind of changing at the time. This was 2009, and they just bought these red cameras that were, you know, these really amazing cameras that no one had, you know, that you could actually just make movies on your own and you could own it. We had started working on like doing our own pitch teasers and our own, kind of concept things. And so I believe, what was the movie? Paranormal Activity was this huge sensation, and the director had just made that in his house with kind of cheap digital cameras. So all that was floating around in the air, and it was like, well, we should just make something our own. And, you know, these guys own a visual effects company, so we can do that kind of like our version of what a Paranormal Activity is, our version of a DIY movie. And we just had to come up with this kind of hook for the aliens themselves. And then how could we do something different in it? It all kind of stemmed from having the practical location of, the director, Greg Strauss, had just bought this penthouse in Marina del Rey overlooking the city. So it was like, okay, well, you know, they'd wake up, there'd be the blinds, maybe it's a light, and then, okay, we got to get up on the helipad, on the rooftop, and then, you know, we'd love to see a big monster. So it all just kind of flowed organically from there for the first film. And I think my passion was definitely in the more action-orientated direction. So when I had an opportunity to direct the sequel, I wanted to move more in that direction. And I think just from working on AVP2 and loving aliens like my whole life, I'd always wanted to do a space adventure movie. And so I finally found once we had Rose, Lizzie Morgan's character, as the lead, that it was a great vehicle to kind of get us into a more intergalactic direction.
And you wrote and directed Skylines, this third one. What was your direction, this story going? And you have to explain the tease of there might be more.
I guess the direction of it was so interesting to me because, you know, like when I wrote the script and came up with it, it was going to be post-apocalyptic Los Angeles because it's where I live, and it's where the first two kind of have their jumping off point. So, you know, I take my kids up to Griffith Park, and it's such an interesting park for a city where you can kind of feel like you're in the complete wilderness. And then you look out and you see, you know, this sprawl in front of you. So that kind of was a little bit of the jumping off point that they were, the tent village was going to be in Griffith Park. But then we were, you know, out there looking for financing, and the opportunity presented itself to make it a UK co-production. Everything switched to London, and we ended up filming in Lithuania, outside of Vilnius, Lithuania, and we really brought together this like very European team of collaborators, and that really inspired me to just push it into a different visual direction. You know, we have a great production designer, Cedric from Belgium. My DP is French, Alain Duplantier. And then, of course, you have this really talented Vilnius crew that built all these amazing spaceships and alien planet sets. So, the vision was to kind of, like, be the Beyond Skyline and Skylines, the alien world, like, on steroids. But it was just, it always kind of goes in different directions that you're not expecting. For me, in this case, it was like collaborating with other people that really were bringing their A game and forcing me to kind of, you know, come up a level. Oh, the tease. Wait, but you said tease?
Oh,
the tease, yep. Of more?
The tease of more.
Well, the tease of more is, that's just a lesson that I feel like I learned from these movies, is that the first one had, I think, too big of a tease, and that became controversial at the time. It was like a really big cliffhanger. The second film, the first cut that we screened had no cliffhanger whatsoever, and people were really upset about not knowing what happened to Rose and wanting to know what could happen next. So the reshoot was adding Lindsay Morgan's character to the second movie. And once I worked with her, I kind of was inspired. Like, I felt like, oh, now I know what the third one could be. And so, yeah, so it's like, it's an ending each time, but it's a possible tease if we make another one. But for me, each movie kind of stands alone on its own. So for this one, without giving too much away, I felt like a lot of my three main characters in this, of Rose, her brother Trent, and Leon, played by Jonathan Howard, that they kind of were at a really great place at the ending, and I needed to kind of pull the rug out on one last thing that could be a different reset of what their arcs could be, and some additional closure, and perhaps some reconsideration of things that she believed. So I felt like it's a great tease for a possible fourth one, but if it, at the same time, I feel like the movie's complete. So that's kind of the balance that I try to tread each time, right?
Awesome. So talk a little bit about the effects. You talked about the set building, and how much was practical, how much was digital, because some of the internal sets where we see, like, I think it's the command deck where we see, like, General Radford and the other operatives.
Yeah.
Looks really, really cool.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's. I'd say the sets in this are 90% practical. It's just really extensions. You know, it's like, it's always a practical base. There was only one fully green screen set in the finished film, and that's when Rose is out on the catwalk to try to retrieve the core drive around the midpoint of the movie. The rest of the sets are at least like three walls. That was sort of the philosophy that I learned from Beyond Skyline, where we ended up having to use way too much green screen, and it was really, really difficult to not only shoot but then finish, just always having to kind of build everything. It wasn't necessarily what I wanted to do at the time, but it was the only way to get it done within the shooting schedule that we had, in the shooting budget that we had. So for this one, I was like, I wanted to build as much as possible, always do. But I think it really works with, you know, alien CG environments, is that if you kind of at least build the three walls, and you can get a lot of the drama in there in camera. And then when you turn and you get the reverse into the fourth wall, that's where the green screen is. And that's where we kind of put in an expansive, more sci-fi environment. So, like, for example, you'd have a fight between two characters. They're punching into the set. And then kind of for the splash page, big punch, we'll cut to that other angle, and you can kind of see the big CG world behind them. So it's a little bit of creative and producerial, you know, budget managing, and how you can kind of make something, you know, look big on limited resources.
How was it working with the varying budgets? Because Skyline definitely has a different budget than AVP.
AVP was definitely the biggest one, but all three of these kind of have the same budget. All three of the Skyline movies are within the same range, give or take a million or two. But it is really about how you use the budget. You know, like the first movie was like the cheapest shooting budget. But we spent the most, I think, on post, because we got picked up from Universal Relativity and this big, huge marketing push. So we were able to hire like really expensive sound team and music team and mix. And there was a kind of no expense spared after we shot it, because we got, you know, acquired by such a big studio. So then for Beyond Skyline, it was like, okay, let's try to make a more balanced film so that it's not such a cheap shooting budget, and we can kind of we built this world, we've done all the assets, we have the ships and stuff, we can kind of go less on the VFX, We even used, you know, a lot of the same sounds from all three movies. We try to recycle as much as possible so that we're, you know, still giving new things and new elements, but like just the basics and in the language, you know, that's the benefit of making a sequel, right? So, so then in three, it was like even the suits that we had built in part two, we just put those in storage, and then we had a great team out of Spain, Crete, take those alien foam latex practical suits, and they refurbished them. They put on a fresh coat of paint. They changed the nasty liners on the inside and made them sanitary to wear again. But we brought them back. We innovated in a few ways where we had these crazy stilt legs in the second one. And if you watch the blooper reel, the actors are falling over quite a bit because they were very springy and had like a tiny point. So we built new legs that could work completely in camera. And, so there was kind of like wearing like a big high heel for our like 6'5" stuntmen. So they weren't any more comfortable, but they did fall over less.
Nice. So for you in making something like Skylines, what is the most fun for you? Is it preparing to shoot, doing the shoot, just setting up? What is it that gets you the most excited, looking forward to getting up and heading down to set again?
Yeah, it is kind of like it is making your day. You know, like the schedule was a lot tighter on this one than the second one, and it was really challenging. Even I hadn't worked with an actual second unit before, and so there were scenes where I would have to shoot Lindsay's side of a fight or a chase, like in the warehouse at the beginning. We're shooting Lindsay's side on the main unit, and then the second unit is shooting back her overs towards the stunt performers, you know, where the fight is. So that was like a real mind melter on scheduling and just being like, you know, making sure you've got everything to make the cut. So those days were really hard and challenging to begin with. But once you kind of like get into that groove, yeah, I get really, really manic and excited for kind of the whole production. And it's just a great feeling when you kind of know you've got it, or you know you've nailed it. Or probably the best feeling is like my favorite shot in the whole movie is towards the end, when Lindsay's character kind of uses all of her powers possible to save someone very important to her, and she's kind of blasting right into the camera. There's a shot of it in the trailer where she's blasting this purple mm-hmm. energy right into the camera. And that, like, wasn't even supposed to be done on the day because we were like, well, she's going to have to be on a wire, so we'll do that one on green screen. And it wasn't on my shot list, and we're making our way through it. And I just was like, it's going to suck on green screen. This whole back is going to be, like, why aren't we doing it on the set? And it was just because of schedule that we couldn't get her in the wire and do that in time. We needed to do everything else. So I kind of went to my DP and was like, what if we put her on a sled in front of the dolly? And then they like, you know, the grip's like, oh, I can do that. And he called, and then they delivered a sled within like an hour. So we're still filming and we get to this shot, and then she gets on a sled and kind of turns right into camera and blasts. And even Lindsay, who's like, you know, never afraid to give her all because it wasn't on the shot list that day, it was kind of like, oh man, like you're just kind of dropping this on me. And the camera's like right up in her body, and she's sitting there screaming into it. And I was like, you just have to trust me. This is going to be the best shot of the movie. And you know, thankfully she delivered. And it's the one that gives me chills every time. I'm just kind of, that's the best feeling when you're like, you kind of know it's there, but you don't quite find it. And then right at the last moment, all these kind of magical things come together and everybody executes at the best level that they can. And that makes you really, really proud.
That's awesome. The movie is Skylines. It's the third in the Skyline franchise, and will be available on demand and digital on December 18th from Vertical Entertainment. Liam, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
And we'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Slice of Sci-Fi.
Hey, welcome back to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and my guest now is renowned genre actor Alexander Siddig, who plays General Radford in the upcoming sci-fi space epic adventure slash heist movie, Skylines, coming out December 18th from Vertical. Hi, Alexander.
Hello. What a great introduction. Thank you. Well, a renowned genre actor.
You are a fan favorite from a number of places, but this movie, Skylines, is the potentially concluding to a trilogy that's been running for a few years now. Yeah, you never know. And you play a general who is leading a hopefully humanity-saving mission to an alien planet to recover a device that will save not only humanity, but the pilots. And this is a really intense movie, and I enjoyed watching it. How did you come across this role?
Thank you, Summer. It was great fun making it. I got it probably before last spring, 2019. And I just the typical way, my agent said, "Hey, script, want to look at it?" And I was like, "Sure, I'll look at it." And it was one of those scripts that puzzled me because there was something not quite right about it. It was, I don't know what it was. Was it too simple? Was there not enough? I just couldn't figure it out, but something was telling me that I should get involved because it could be as fun as it looked. But if it didn't go well, it would be an absolute disaster. That's the kind of thing, that might get just seen in some remote parts of China only. And so I tentatively talked to the director and said, "Look, this script hits me a certain way. I see it as a massive romp. Please don't tell me you're trying to make a Citizen Kane here." And he went, "No, I see it as a romp too. I see it as just a load of fun. And what we want is just tons and tons of fun things happening in the movie." And from the moment he said that, I breathed a huge sigh of relief and went, "You know what? I'm in. I love the idea. This is exactly the kind of thing I feel like doing right now."
Awesome. And the movie was written and directed by Liam O'Donnell, who actually also did the second movie in this series, Beyond Skyline. So he's very familiar with the world and the world building and the topics. And the fact that he saw it as just a fun space adventure with alien ships and damage and destruction and explosions, that helps make it fun to make.
Leave your brain at the door. There's a pandemic on, sit at the sofa and forget about the rest of the world for a few seconds. That's basically what we're asking people to do. You give us 15 minutes of your life and we will then do all the heavy lifting for the next hour and a half. And that's it. That's the deal. You want to get involved? Please come. You have to concentrate for the first few minutes while you figure out who everybody is, what's going on, what world you're in, what could be happening here. And then we'll just take over. We'll just take over your brain, as the aliens say. we'll visit you at the end of the movie, hopefully having had a rip-roaringly good time.
Nice. Now, how much of the story that you were sent in the script, were there any changes along the way, any adjustments you had to make once you got on set and got used to everybody and what the balance of the roles were going to be?
No, I mean, everything was pretty much, I mean, there was one actor who couldn't get their visa, a martial arts star coming out of China, actually, I think, ironically, it might have been Hong Kong, who couldn't get their visa at the last minute. And so the stuntman had to do the job for them, which was fantastic. And I will tell you his name, but I just can't remember it. And also, I'm not sure I'm allowed to tell you it even happened because it's one of those things that some movies like keep themselves. But literally, one of the actors, one of the ensemble actors, one of the main actors, was the stuntman for the actor who was supposed to turn up, but they didn't get their visa. So we went the first week we were filming and was like, well, you know, just will you stand here and be him for a while so that when he gets here, because he's going to get his visa any day now, you'll hop out, he'll jump in, but at least we won't have to reshoot the whole scene. We'll just shoot the bits that you're in. And so he did. He delivered the lines. It's pretty incredibly well, actually. And the guy never turned up. So he ended up being the character. And maybe there'll be a sort of prize for anybody who guesses which character that was. But I think that kind of addresses your question. That was the only major thing that was like, ooh, this is completely different to what I thought it was going to be. Other than that, scripts of this sort of budget can't afford to mess around too much. They can't afford to stray. They've locked in locations. They've locked in all the different people and things they need exactly when they need them. And if they go over, they end up spending too much money. Only big Hollywood movies can afford to do that kind of messing around. You know, when the director turns up and goes, I don't like the set, rebuild another one. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's going to take us another week. So everything was done for real. And it was incredibly hard work because, you know, when you have scripts of this size, everybody works harder to make sure that they work. And Liam and Lindsay Morgan, Liam is the director and Lindsay Morgan is the actor. My goodness, she's a star in the making. She is going to be a rock god. She's absolutely got something that you need to be a huge movie star. I hope that the doors of good fortune open for her because she's got all the equipment. She's charming and got, you know, ovaries of steel. She's just amazing. So I'm hoping she'll become a big action star one day if she chooses to be.
I hope she does because she absolutely kicked ass in these movies.
Yeah, and it's really hard to do. You know, remember Angelina Jolie in Tomb Raider? Sure, she was incredibly charming and beautiful and da 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 da, but she just couldn't pull off the carnage in a way that I felt was credible, because it's really hard to embody both those things, being really tough and really amazingly charismatic and sweet and charming is incredibly difficult. And very few actors have ever been able to pull it off. And this young woman does it, and she does it really well.
Yeah, the fact that these are indie movies and they are so well put together, the special effects shots, some of the action shots are really, really engaging and gorgeous to look at.
Yeah.
How do you find indie movie making? Because right now I'm seeing a lot of movies take chances, both science fiction and horror, take chances with storytelling because of the budgets. They are locked into staying with those stories.
Yeah, yeah. I think you've got to. I mean, it's treacherous territory. I mean, when there was a movie once back in the 90s called Swimming with Sharks, which described the movie industry.
Yeah.
And it basically is that, you know, these are shark infested territories with investors backing out and people double crossing you and people, you know, I mean, all the worst possible. You're meeting some of the shadiest characters in the world. Who knows where some of this money even comes from? So you've got to be really careful. The business end of making movies is treacherous and dangerous. And I'm always astonished when someone does an honest film. Something that hasn't cut any corners. They set out to make a film that will entertain, and they duly deliver and do that. There's a few directors in history who've done that regularly, like Spielberg, but it's incredibly difficult to do. And I'm always like, wow. I mean, as an actor, you go, well, it's 50-50. This may be one I'm going to forget. But luckily, this is not. And I watched it on Friday with my wife, but we both loved it. And my wife doesn't like sci-fi.
Wow.
You know, we're like chalk and cheese, you know? She saw one episode of Deep Space Nine, and she said, I don't remember you from it. And I was like, what do you mean? I was in every show. And she said, no, I don't remember you being in it at all. And it turns out there was one episode in the entire 7-year run of Deep Space Nine that I was not in. And she saw that one. So she has absolutely no idea. So it if we both enjoy it, I think there's deserve to have as much fun as possible. And it's our job, both yours and mine, to make sure they do.
Nice. So do you think you'll make more science fiction so she can learn to enjoy seeing you in them?
She'd just ignore it. She just won't watch it. So she's stuck in her ways, you know. She likes her movies, and that's it. She really refuses to cross the aisle. Right. She might sneak a peek. But I like making science fiction stuff because it's home for me. You know, I was basically brought up on the set at Paramount Studios as an actor for 7 years. And it's like my room at my mom's house has still got my posters on the wall and everything. And I can just go back there whenever I feel uncomfortable.
Nice. Do you have any aspirations to, you know, directing, producing, showrunning?
Yeah, we are producing. I'm producing right now. We've got three different shows on, three different companies, not in development. I mean, everything's in development, isn't it? And we're very ambitious. We're very low-key. We're a little boutique. There's only a couple of us who work together, both actors. My friend Al Petrie, who is in Star Wars, is now in Sex Education and lots of different other things. He's a wonderful actor. And we both have the same sort of sensibility. So we're producing, but we buy books and that we love. And we spend a lot of time making sure that they get beaten into shape and written by wonderful writers if we can find them. And then we try and sell them to broadcasters who are so picky.
Well, I will, for one, be looking forward to seeing what you're coming up with next because, like I said, I'm a huge science fiction fan, both of television, movies, and books. And everything you said just sounds delightful.
Thank you. Thank you. You sound delightful, Sandra.
Thank you. Now, where can my listeners find you online to keep track of what you're working on?
I have no social media, I'm afraid to say. I never caught that bus. I don't have Twitter, Facebook, none of it. I've never got involved in that stuff. But I do have a little fan club called SidCity.net, and we meet twice a week while COVID is happening, and people can talk about their feelings and what's going on and if they're okay, and we keep tabs on each other. We have about 100 people who come back all the time, with new people revolving in and out, obviously. So if they really want to say hi, they can turn up to the SidCity Social Club.
Cool. We'll do that. Send people over there. I'm a casual Star Trek fan, but I was a bigger fan of Babylon 5, so me and my friends have had some really fun discussions about DS9 versus Babylon 5, and so we can do some serious instigating with that.
Yeah, Babylon 5 was really the original Deep Space Nine. It just got made afterwards.
Yep. Yep, I am.
Claudia is a good friend of mine.
So awesome.
She's a pistol.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Alexander. The movie is Skylines. It'll be out December 18th from Vertical Entertainment. And we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic? We've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered. In every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
This is Kevin Murphy from Mystery Science Theater 3000 and Rift Tracks, and you have bitten off a nice big chunk of Slice of Sci-Fi.
And it's really cool that Skylines gets to actually complete a trilogy of films about an alien invasion, a resistance rebellion against the alien invasion, and then a traveling to an alien world to retrieve an artifact that can save both humanity and the aliens who were with the humans who rebelled against their alien overlords. So the Skyline, which is the first movie, I believe is available through HBO Max right now. Beyond Skyline is on Netflix, and as of December 18th, you will be able to see Skylines on demand and digital and select theaters. So this kind of is a rare thing to get a trilogy of a indie budget science fiction adventure tale. Go and check it out if you can. And if you have questions, of course, feel free to ask. Call in. The number is 602-635-6976. Or shoot me an email, summer@sliceofscifi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Player FM, and iHeartRadio Podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Help signal boost the show. Let people know you are enjoying it, and maybe they should check it out for themselves. You can follow us on Twitter @SliceOfSciFi. And yes, I will dive into a geeky conversation on Twitter now and then. Doesn't matter if it's about indie sci-fi, indie horror, TV shows like Babylon 5 or Angel. Just the recent books I've read, science fiction, horror, you name it. Other wild and wacky media things, comic books, a lot of graphic novels I have obtained recently that I'm reading through, Porter of Earth, which is, again, aliens coming to do business on Earth. Maybe that was a good deal, maybe it wasn't. And just whatever comes to mind. You can also check out the website, sliceofscifi.com. Come on by. Check out other interviews we have done with other filmmakers and storytellers. And maybe weigh in with your own opinion on some of the reviews that we've done for Blu-rays, DVDs, movies, television shows, graphic novels too. Come on by. Have some fun. I'd like to thank everyone who is helping to support this podcast, this website, and all of the other shows, podcasts, and websites in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges through Patreon, your donations through PayPal really do help keep the lights on around here. So thank you very much for those of you who are helping. Your donations really do, they're life-saving for me. If you'd like to check out how to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Check out the different tiers. And yes, people who are pledging through Patreon, sometimes there's a video bonus, sometimes there's an audio bonus, but every month somebody's email gets pulled from the hat and that person can pick a perk. Be it a book, be it a DVD, be it a Blu-ray, be it a 4K. I have plenty of swag here that needs new homes because I am running out of space. And making sure that the fans, the real fans, the real supporters of Slice of Sci-Fi get first crack at that stuff, I feel it's my duty, my calling to make sure that happens. So for those of you who are supporting through Patreon, thank you. Thank you all. And if a monthly pledge is not something you can commit to, but you would still like to help out every now and then, the link you can use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And that'll do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.